Hi, Kevin Leahy, Black Sheep Hostel, Killarney. Born, bred in Killarney. I was here till I was 21, and set off travelling. Then spent a good few years in Australia, working as a civil engineer. Then I came back to Ireland about 6 years ago and set up the hostel.
What was it that Australia that attracted you to Australia?
I was kind of a done thing, I suppose. Back in the day, everyone either went to Australia or America. So it was just Australia, I suppose. It seemed like the promised land back in the day. Get out of Ireland for a while and see a bit of the world. And Australia was what a lot of people were doing. And I'd met a lot of people that had done it and had a good reputation as being good fun, make some decent money, different lifestyle kind of thing.
And obviously, then you came back and you opened up the hostels. How did that come about?
When I left Australia, I went to South America, and just through my time traveling around there, I suppose the idea was slowly developing. Slowly bubbling away in my head to do something like this in some place. And the idea of Ireland and Killarney just kind of grew and grew and got legs. And Killarney, Kerry's beautiful. Killarney's got a lot going on with the tourism and stuff like that. So yeah, it just kind of brought me home, I suppose. And Ireland's a good place. People are good. It's a safe country. And you're making reasonable money as well when you're charging in a hostel.
So obviously the hostel is known for a lot of things, and obviously we're in the backyard of it now, and you have a big ethos system here. Tell us a bit about it.
Yeah, look, we as I say, there's wild bees, there's bees here, chickens, all the veggies, the polytunnel. We try to be as sustainable as we can, kind of thing, running a business, feed ourselves as much as we can from the garden. There's lots of flowers here. We recycle as much as possible and stuff like that. So yeah, look, it's all part of just trying to look after the environment and do the least amount of damage to the environment as we possibly can.
Did you grow up in a background like that?
Not so much. No. Again, I suppose just through a lot of reading and kind of traveling and having my eyes open, I suppose researching what was happening with climate change. I read several books on it and just realised, yeah, we need to be more gentle on the environment.
And how has this hostel come about in Killarney? Like, what was the take to it when it first opened?
It was good, yeah. Like, from a hostel point of view, it was pretty successful on the first year, but again, that's because Killarney, it was in a good location. So from the off, we were pretty good, pretty successful. I think after the second year, we won Best Hostel in Ireland, which was good. It's just helped the business go stronger and stronger. I suppose traditionally, a lot of people from Killarney wouldn't have really had much to do with hostels or known much about it. It's not since we opened the cafe, kind of dealing with more of the local side as well, kind of thing. So we've become a bit more known locally, I think.
Yeah, that's become a really big popular spot in Killarney, especially when it's so close as well to the park. So that must have been a great help to you to get your name out there as well.
Yeah. Look, I think during the lockdowns, I suppose, early enough in it, we just set the we had a little coffee machine in here in the kitchen, and we set that up in the laneway, as much just to keep the staff busy and just to kind of get, because at the time there was nothing open, so people didn't really have any social outlet. So we said we'd do it, and it just become more and more popular, kind of thing. And it's grown and grown and grown. Now it's a nice solid business.
You have a nice little bus as well for on-the-go coffees. I saw it there at the Ring of Kerry the last day.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So that comes out. We pull that out for a little special events and festivals and stuff like that. Maybe 5 or 6 times a year. It's always good fun to pull that out as well.
It's brilliant, Kevin. You are a person with a big background behind you. So ultramarathons, where did that all come from?
Ultramarathons, again, when I was traveling in South America, I did a lot of endurance trekking, 4, 5, 6 days trekking in the mountains, in the Andes, stuff like that. I really enjoyed it, I suppose, the long time in the camping, and kind of found I was carrying heavy weight. I felt I was pretty strong at the endurance side of things. So when I came back to Ireland, I was looking for a challenge, and the Kerry Way was right here. The Kerry Way Ultramarathon was right here on my doorstep, so I trained and did that the first year I was back, and then did it again. And since then I've been finding different challenges and in different locations, and really enjoying it and constantly learning. Pushing myself in different environments and different races and stuff like that. So yeah, I like the challenge, and I like the lifestyle I lead because of it, and the fact that because I'm varying it, I always have to kind of research and learn a bit more about whether it's my nutrition or my mind or the gear I need to prepare for some of these Arctic races.
What was the Kerry Way like? Describe that experience.
Kerry Ray is a great experience. You know, it's a 190-kilometer ultramarathon around Kerry, starts and finishes here in Killarney. So it's full of highs and lows. I suppose I've done it a few times. I've done it 4 times now, so all kinds of highs and lows. But it's beautiful. You know, a lot of people. There's a wide variety of terrain and scenery as you go around it, and it's day and night, and there's a really good vibe around the whole run. Mainly organised by volunteers, mainly run by volunteers. So it's great. Yeah, I'd recommend anyone who's into ultras in Ireland definitely have a crack at this one. It's Ireland's longest foot race as well, so it's a good challenge.
Is it a popular kind of a sport?
It's growing in popularity. It seems to be growing in popularity the last 4 or 5 years, kind of thing. Yeah.
And did you have anyone that was doing it with you, or was it just all by yourself and you just had someone training you?
It was pretty much all by myself. Again, you know, there was always someone there. I could ask some questions and some experienced people. I read a lot about it as well. But yeah, I suppose to start it was a lot by myself. Yeah, I never really had a running coach or anything like that. I was just kind of figuring it out by feel, kind of thing, organically.
Mm-hmm. What's a day of training like for you?
It varies depending on what's going on. So it could be if it was a long weekend day, it could be 6, 7, 8 hours trekking with a weighted backpack on the mountains, or you know, like a day like today, it was just an hour kind of strength and mobility session. Tomorrow morning will be 15-20 kilometer morning run. So every day is different.
A run?
Yeah.
Wow. How would you do that? How long would that take you?
Up to 2 hours. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So generally, I like to run in the morning. So I'd leave the house at 5:45 in the morning and done by 8:00.
Okay, and that obviously sets you up for the day.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You're feeling great by the time you finish. You know, you're back and you're into work and you're kind of miles ahead of everyone else at that time in the morning. And you know, the morning can be nice. You catch a nice sunrise as well. It can be really, really refreshing.
I suppose I hate talking about lockdowns and COVID. What happened, you know, over the last couple of years? But how did that impact you?
Look, there was positive and negatives overall. Like, I suppose every cloud has a silver lining. I ended up kind of opening a cafe and adding a successful business to the hostel. For me, more positives than negatives. You know, obviously it was hard at times. It was frustrating. We weren't able to go places. I had a race in Canada cancelled. I had a race in Sweden cancelled. So they were pretty low points for me. But as much as possible, I tried to just keep going, kind of thing. And I was able to train within my 5K. And again, one of the businesses was kind of always going. Just kind of keep it. Use that time to do a bit of work around the house and stuff as well.
Like a lot of us as well. Now, obviously, you had your marathons cancelled, but 2022 you got them back. Tell us a bit about the experience of Canada at least.
Yeah, so Canada was up in the Yukon, in the northwest of Canada was the Yukon. It's a 500-kilometer race up in the Arctic, or just below the Arctic Circle. So Arctic conditions, like it was minus 35 degrees, lots of snow in this particular race. But awesome experience, you know, real wilderness, no phone reception. You mightn't see anyone for 20-24 hours, kind of thing. So real kind of self-survival stuff. You pull all your food and your sleeping equipment and everything in a sled behind you. So that was an awesome experience. The scenery up there is beautiful. As I said, the conditions are very, very harsh. The people you meet and the volunteers in the race and the race directors and all that is it's all just really good fun.
What was going through your head in that experience?
Look, all kinds of highs and lows. I was questioning my sanity sometimes, and other times saying I was on a real high, because you're just surviving in nature, kind of thing. It's very, very simple. But yeah, it was overall very positive experience. I'm delighted I did it, and delighted I was able to do it. Had the opportunity and was healthy enough to kind of get through the Yukon and then move over to Sweden and get through the Swedish race as well.
And how did that one? Did that differ much to the other race?
Yeah, Sweden. The conditions were much milder in Sweden. It was almost kind of too hot at times. Sweden certainly wasn't as wild as the Yukon. But again, I went into it kind of very fatigued and tired after only having 3 weeks rest from their race before. So it provided different challenges. But again, it was lovely. We were in Swedish Lapland. People were really friendly. It was the first time that race had been run, so it was a nice experience up there as well.
Mm-hmm. Was there a lot of people taking part in that?
About 40, I think, started the race in Sweden, and just over 20 started the race in Canada.
Okay, right. Yeah. And when it was minus 35 degrees, how did you prepare yourself for that?
Look, for in those conditions, it's all about layering. You know, having enough of the good clothes on, kind of thing. So two or three pairs of gloves, two or three jackets. Constantly, when you're on the move, you're generating your own heat. So just constantly moving, or if you stop, then you put on another much heavier jacket. From a climatization point of view, you can't really do much. It's very different. It's different than the heat. If for a hot race, you would ideally be living in those conditions or training in those conditions for a while, but the cold. I just trained here in Ireland, but I kind of knew I was able to handle that type of cold. I'd been in those conditions a couple of times before.
Mm-hmm. And did you have to camp overnight when you were doing those races?
Yeah, we slept out. I slept out every night. Yeah.
What was that like?
Cold, interesting. You know, again, it's -35 degrees. You set up your tent and got a little blow up sleeping mat and a very good sleeping bag, and you jump in and do your best to sleep, kind of thing. But you know, sleep was limited. I only slept like 15 hours in the first race, and about the same in the second race.
Okay, wow. Jeez, you must have been exhausted afterwards.
Yeah.
And what you do is all self funded, isn't it?
Yes. The majority of it is, yeah. Yep.
Mm-hmm. And what is it that makes you keep doing these? You're still training, you were training, was it this morning?
Yeah.
Yeah, what's your goal?
There's no goal. I suppose I just enjoy training. I enjoy new experiences, seeing new places, and again, just being in the wilderness. So there's no end goal. Just to keep on enjoying the training, keep on pushing myself, and see where it takes me.
What was your family's reaction when you did it?
They were proud. I'm sure my parents, brothers and sisters were proud, but they probably just think I'm mad.
Would any of them be interested in this?
Not so much, no. Not the endurance stuff, no.
Okay, right. And if there was anyone that wanted to take on these kind of marathons and stuff like that, what advice would you give them?
Loads of it. I suppose listen to your body. You know, to get up to these kind of distances, it certainly takes a couple of years of your body adapting. Don't do too much too soon. Just make sure you're enjoying it as well, you know. I suppose there's always someone to ask a question. You know, if it's anyone locally and they want to get into it, I'm more than happy to get you up and running for a tea or coffee and talk to them about my experience and help them along the way. I'm happy to share some of the knowledge I've picked up over the last 4 or 5 years, you know.
Mm-hmm. Definitely, and it's definitely inspiring for other people as well. Have you any races coming up in the meantime?
Not this year. I think I'm still kind of just taking it easy. I'd say probably my next big race will be in Finland next year, in February next year, a place called Rovaniemi.
Okay, and what can we expect from that?
That is a 300-kilometer ultramarathon in Lapland again, up in Rovaniemi. So, yeah, like a nice Arctic style race again, similar to the ones I've done, but probably a bit more. They'll be shorter, but this race seems to be a lot wilder as well. So I think you're really left to your own devices for it. There's not many finishers generally most years.
And you're obviously on your own in that sense as well. Does it ever feel really lonely when you're there?
No, I never get lonely. I'm quite happy in my own company. So it never really gets lonely. But you know, you are happy when you pull into an aid station every anything between 12 and 24 hours. You'll pull into a little aid station, whether it's a tent in the middle of nowhere or a little village or a little petrol station, and that's quite nice. You know, they'll feed you and look after you for a half an hour, and away you go again, full and happy into the wilderness again.
Do you keep any diary of the events when you're going through?
I don't. People say I should, but I don't. But look, Adrian from Grandview Media has been following me for the last couple of years, and together we're kind of putting together a documentary of my experience over the last couple of years through the highs and lows of COVID and obviously climaxing in Sweden after finishing 1,000 kilometres. So he's busy editing that at the moment, and we're hoping that'll be out in August, September. So hopefully people will get a chance to see a documentary kind of thing, with explaining some of the more details and showing some of the beautiful places I've trained and raced and stuff like that over the last couple of years.
Mm-hmm. It would definitely be an amazing experience to witness as well. I suppose a lot of people can travel with you and don't see from your eyes, but definitely to see the documentary of what you do will be absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, I think it'll help some people understand what maybe why I do it or how we do it and stuff like that. Yeah, and hopefully it inspires some people just to get out there and just have adventures in the mountains or in the wilderness kind of thing. That's mm-hmm. what it's all about.
Definitely. Kevin, thanks so much for sharing your story. It's absolutely fascinating, and hopefully you can inspire more people. Make a little team of ultramarathons here in Kerry.
Thank you. My pleasure.